Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen, Studio A, and over in Studio B is the Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing tonight?
Yes, yes, Black Rasputin. Yes, I'm in my lair. What's going on, Don Allen?
Well, pretty soon we're going to have a guest tonight from Southside Pride, the publisher, Mr. Ed Feline, and we're going to talk about Velma Corbell and her reappointment, if they're going to reappoint her to the...
Velma Corbell, the queen of civil rights in Minneapolis and actually the state of Minnesota.
Yeah.
She's been doing a heck of a job over there in the Civil Rights Department. But what you got, Don? What else you got?
Well, we got, you know, there's something that we have to talk about is this this Urban League and their school, their high school in South Minneapolis. Today, the Star Tribune reported, and let me just scroll down to that. I apologize, I didn't have it on the screen, but it's an alternative school for about 100 students run by the Minneapolis Urban League has flunked the district evaluation for schools and students who struggle in conventional high school. But this is something, Mr. Edwards, that we've noticed back in 2008, where from 2008 to this last year with the MCA scores, 2 and 3, the Minneapolis Urban League school over there in South Minneapolis has never submitted any grades.
We talked about that quite a bit.
Yeah.
People said we didn't know what we were talking about or we shouldn't have talked about it. I'm not quite sure which one it's supposed to be.
mm-hmm. Yeah, but also this brings up some interesting a spin on things because the bill HF 1149, which was part of an education and employability solution for young adults, is co-authored by Senator Hayden, Senator Champion, and Representative Ray Dean and Will Morgan. From SD 56 is something that was supposed to give the Urban League a lot of money to do a 13th grade. Now, with this coming down from the public school system, which, you know, we don't really hold in high standards anyway, but, I mean, I wonder what this is going to do to their future of this legislation and getting this money to start this 13th grade.
You know, that's certainly a good question, and I expect that the elected political leaders will answer that, and I assume that the district has taken that under consideration with this really one-year probation. In the article in the Star Tribune that you made mention of previously, the superintendent who has been on a I apologize tour here, she does quite a bit of apologizing, particularly out in the white community, but we'll get to that later. Talked in terms that they be given another chance or whatever that's supposed to mean. I remember a time when the Street Academy, as it initially was called, was one of the premier kind of alternative schools in the United States and certainly in inside of the Urban League movement. But, you know, things change. So,
yeah.
But on the issue of the money coming from the legislature, I'm not sure that how that's going to be dealt with, and I don't know what the position of the Commissioner of Education, Brenda Casillas, is with regards to this kind of, you know, this is a tenuous situation politically and educationally, if you will, because it's not like the Urban League of Minneapolis. We don't want to confuse anybody because there is no Urban League in St. Paul. The Urban League of Minneapolis has had many, 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 many years, in fact, decades, of dealing with education, alternative education, and et cetera. I just don't know how they got themselves in this kind of position, and maybe board member of the Urban League or Mr. Scott Gray or somebody are welcome to call in. Give that phone number, Don. phone lines are open to discuss this, or, you know, maybe there's no concern that this school has failed the test. But let's get the phone number out there.
Mr. Edwards?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I stepped away for a minute because I got three texts at once.
Okay. Well, yeah, the phone number. Pull the phone number out there.
Okay.
I thought you were right there by the mic.
Yeah. The phone number tonight, the phone lines are open, is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And, Mr. Edwards, we had started the show talking about our guest, Ed Feline from Southside Pride, and he happens to be on the line with us right now, actually. And, Ed, welcome to the show.
Hey. Hi, Don. Ron?
Hey,
yeah, this is Don and Ron. That's Don just speaking, and this is Ron. How you doing, Eddie?
Hey, good, Ron. Hey, are we on?
We are.
Yeah, we're on the air. We're on the air live.
Okay.
We're on the air live.
I thank you so much for asking me on and let me talk here for a moment. I'm very, very upset about the reappointment of Velma Korbel to the Civil Rights Department. I mean, she has, along with Don Samuels, they shredded the Civilian Review Authority, and she wouldn't allow public discussion of that. She has done everything she can to eliminate any possibility of citizen review of the police, and the police execution of Terrence Franklin 2 years ago was an absolute obscenity, and nobody in city government said anything about it, and they allowed this police report to go through with obvious lies and mischaracterizations in it, and nobody did anything. And
just one slight correction for our international and national audience. It actually happened less than a year ago. The death of T.T. Franklin happened in May of last year. But go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's been.
Yeah.
It's been a long year.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has in more ways than one.
The thing is, the police, what we know is that in a basement at 27th and Bryant, this kid was found. The police beat him up, smacked him across the face with one of those long flashlights.
Yeah,
and he jumped out of there, and the officer came up behind him, grabbed him by the hair, and shot him 7 times in the right temple. He had to be standing behind him, not in front of him, when he did that, because, you know, if he's right-handed, he had to grab him by the right hand in order to put 7 slugs in his right temple. So there was no investigation of that. There was no serious hearing before the grand jury. And the Civil Rights Department did nothing about it. This is a chance we have now with the appointment of Korbel, Velma Korbel.
Reappointment. We want to make sure that our listening audience is keen.
Right.
This is the
reappointment
of Velma
Korbel.
Yeah.
We have a chance to stop for a moment and look at the Civil Rights Department, look at the Civil Rights Commission, and see if we don't want to make some changes here and make something, that create something that will be a voice for ordinary people to have a voice in city government when their civil rights are being destroyed. It used to be, I think, Ron, you and I are old enough to remember, there was a time when the Civil Rights Commission had the power to investigate the police.
I was the overseer for that back in the 1970s. That was taken away by the Minneapolis City Council in 1973, the subpoena authority for the commission. Is the commission still around? I've not seen a published anything from the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission in 4 or 5 years, ever since Mr. Ken Brown, one of the most outstanding civil rights activists, was forced off the the commission by then Mayor R.T. Ryback. That was about 5 years ago. I didn't even know the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission even convenes. I don't know that they even sit, if you will. Let me just say this: it's important for people to.
But you know,
no. Let me say this. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. But what folks have to understand also, it's not unusual for Ms. Corbell to be a blocker. You and others apparently forget that she was very much involved as a board member of the Y in the cover-up, which cost the city, what was it, $400,000, or more, in the case of the tasering death of a young man by the name of Smith, which finally was settled mid part of last year. Ms. Corbell was, in fact, asked by both Mr. Allen and myself under color of law to open an investigation into the violation of his civil rights, of Mr. Smith's civil rights, and she declined. She refused to be involved or even examine what happened, and also did not declare the fact that she had a real serious conflict of interest in being a board member. And then later, she lobbied for a very good friend of hers, Ms. Ferguson, who served on the Y board with her, to become the human resources director, if you will. And so it looks like there's a lot of plagiarism down there. She has the sister of the compliance chief of the Met Council. Francois is on the staff there. The whole situation with Michael Brown, the shredding of information and documents just over the last 7 or 8 weeks. I mean, you know, this is a mafia shop down there. The Civil Rights Department, you know, would do credit to organized crime. But go ahead, Ed. You're attempting to raise the consciousness. What are you recommending?
People should know more about that. What we need to happen, though, Ron, right now, the vote is going to come up Friday. Day after tomorrow, the city council is going to vote on whether or not to reappoint Velma to be director of civil rights. Now, what we can do, we need 6 votes to stop this. That's all we need. Right now, it looks like Duong Yang, who represents the Fifth Ward, is supporting stopping Velma. He was the only one in his committee to vote against it. We're counting on him.
Now, do you need 6 or do you need 7 votes, Ed?
What?
Do you need 6 votes or 7 votes?
We need 6 votes because John Quincy is not going to be there. We know he's out of the country. He will not be in the council meeting on Friday. So all we need is 6 votes to block it. You know, that's a good question, and that's what it seems like to us. And we've got Duong Yang, we've got Andrew Johnson from the 12th Ward, we've got Alondra Cano from the 9th Ward. We don't have Elizabeth Glidden from the 8th Ward, which we should have. I mean, Elizabeth Glidden should be supporting this restructuring of the Civil Rights Department. She should be opposed to Velma's reappointment.
I don't think that will ever happen. And that was a part of Elizabeth Glidden agreeing to certain considerations when she was allowed to be voted in as vice president of the council. That was one of the trade-offs she made in not embarrassing herself against current incumbent president Barb Johnson. So you're not going to get Elizabeth's vote. Who else do you think you can get? You only have 3 there. You only named 3.
We think that Lisa Bender and Linnea Palmisano from the 10th and the 13th Ward will support.
Okay, that's 5.
That's 5. We need a 6th vote. And we should, in this case, be able to get somebody like Cam Gordon should be supporting this. But Cam has got some we're trying to talk to Cam about this, but we've got a lot of people talking to him, but so far he's not moving in our direction.
That's interesting. But what I'll do is let you get complete your lobbying really for a action, and then I will have to share with our listening audience. I'm concerned about Cam Gordon not being prepared to commit to holding up the appointment based on conversations he's been having just as recently as today with former employees of the department who have told him some horrifying stories, including some real phobia down there and an attack on a transgender person and very derogatory statements by Ms. Corvell. In fact, Cam knows, if he's listening or if he listens to the program later on, Cam knows that he has been told the kind of comments that were made about transgender persons and et cetera. And that's interesting as pertains to Elizabeth Clinton because she has, I do believe, a transgender person in her office. And so, and they're talking now about forming a transgender committee to look at transgender bias in the city of Minneapolis. So there's a lot of hypocrisy, but I hope you get Cam's vote. I hope you get his vote.
Yeah. Oh, you're absolutely right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anything else, Eddie? And Mr. Allen, you have any questions?
Oh, no, I'm just listening. Well, I do want to say this, that there's a Facebook page, Vote No to Velma Corbell. Call Minneapolis City Council members. It starts tonight at 8:30 p.m., but, of course, they don't open until tomorrow morning. All the wards from 1 to 13 and the representatives and their telephone numbers are there. So it's very easy. Start at the beginning of the list and just stop at the end. And it's an event
that's
on
right.
Facebook. Yeah. So start
exactly,
calling them.
Exactly, Ron.
Okay, that's Don. That's Don there. And this is Ron here. Okay, Ed, we appreciate it, and we'll be watching closely, okay?
All right.
Hey, thank you,
all right. Take care, buddy.
Thank you guys.
All right.
Very,
all right.
Much.
Take it easy. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Okay.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, we're back.
Yeah.
Yeah, that civil rights thing is going to be a tough haul because everything that Velma was supposed to do, even like I remember during the stadium time when she's supposed to have an equity plan on like the end of June and never completed it, she did not get in any trouble. And, you know, 2 weeks, well, 3 weeks ago, I sent the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights a request to find out what cases they self-initiated, if any, from 2012 to 2013. And they have not gotten back with me at all whatsoever.
Yeah, I know, and they won't be getting back to you. And I also want to remind our listening audience, both domestically and nationally, is that the issue of Cornelius Smith is a very serious one. So, I appreciate what Ed said, but Ed and others obviously didn't follow that one closely. As we certainly follow this closely, Cornelius Smith tasered to death, if you will, a significant payout made in that situation. But there was a reward for one of the board members, Ms. Ferguson, if you will, who showed up a year and a half later as the director of human resources, very close friend and confidant of Velma Corbell. I just don't think the votes are there, Mr. Allen. I don't think that the six votes because of the absence of Councilman Quinn, I don't think, that, or is it Quincy, that I don't think that the that sixth vote is going to be forthcoming, and I certainly don't expect it to come from Cam Gordon. I mean, for a lot of different reasons with regards to his inconsistency and kind of flip-flopping. So I think Velma Corbell is back in. I think, and as I said in my newspaper column in the Spokesman Recorder 3 weeks ago, it is a bad appointment, an extremely bad appointment. But I think that's what the Hodges administration wants, bad appointments, if you will, particularly when you talk in terms of really doing something in the area of equity and race and et cetera. All we're getting is a lot of lip service. You know, things are not improving for people of color in this city. But, hey, nothing beats a fail but a try. Nothing beats a try but a fail. So we certainly wish them the best. And as Ed said, the council will vote on Friday on the recommendation on a 4-1-1 vote. Four in favor, one against, and one of the committee members abstained. And so, you know, we'll see what happens. We imagine that, if you've noticed, though, the Star Tribune, which normally expresses opinions about people of that level of incompetency, normally endorse their appointment and et cetera. I noticed that the Star Tribune has taken at this hour no position, and so the Star Tribune is playing it pretty safe, waiting until after the vote Friday, and then probably saying that it's a good appointment, and this also allows the opportunity of Ms. Corvell to do some reorganization, if you will, kind of get some fresh paint and repaint the face of failure, okay, because that's really what it's been. What else we got, Don? Any calls? Phone lines are open, by the way. The
phone lines are wide
on
open.
This issue, the reappointment of a civil rights director.
Yep, the 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And, you know, Mr. Edwards, a lot of people forget, but when she was first appointed, and they kind of had, well, actually before she was appointed, they had that public hearing led by then council member Robert Lilligren.
I filmed that whole thing, and she was there to reorganize the mess that the previous civil rights director, that she was going to be this outstanding organizer and make sure the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights ran smoothly and, you know, just all this stuff and, you know, give her the opportunity. But we've seen a horrifying last few years here of her practices down there at the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. And also, there's one other thing we got to bring up, you know, the number of sexual harassment lawsuits that the city has quietly paid off for employees or attorneys down there. So,
Yeah. There was some pretty riveting testimony by some of the employees, by the way, who are all white, though there was one East Indian young lady, but these were white employees. And then there are the big settlements that have been paid out. And those names are known to the seven council members who were able to retain their seats in the last election. The six, because there are seven new council members. Bong Yang himself was fired from the Civil Rights Department in what was a very messy situation that never was fully explored or, quote-unquote, investigated. So it's going to, you know, be interesting. This comes at a time when the ability and the effectiveness of the Civil Rights Department is so desperately needed. But on the other hand, I've heard leadership in the African-American community indicate that these are happy days and there are really no problems, and that all of this complaining and et cetera by some people who are nothing more than flamethrowers, whatever, you know, that means, should cease and desist, and we just all get along to get along, whatever that means. So, you know, that's what I see. Don, wanted to tell you a little joke, and that was we're going to put your name up as the budget director for the Minneapolis Public Schools. After that fiasco, we're going to certainly need to talk about that a little bit. Minneapolis Public Schools embarrassed by an article in yesterday's edition of the paper. they made a budget out, and they didn't allocate enough money for the southwest, the silk stocking area of the city. And Bernadier Johnson had to apologize to all those parents out there in the southwest area of the city for the neglect and negligence as it pertains to their little children. As I said earlier, and that was not really tongue-in-cheek, Bernadier's been doing a lot of apologizing to the white community for, you know, errors and judgment policies and et cetera, you know. Maybe at some point somebody will apologize to the black community and the Native American community for the lack of quality of education in the Minneapolis public schools.
Yeah, I agree. And, Mr. Edwards, you know, we've talked about this in the productions meetings, but I find it highly problematic the number of incidents in our educational system for children of color, not just black children, Native American, Asian, Somalian, et cetera, and handicapped, disabled, et cetera, but there is not one voice coming out of the black community in a way that, and I know this is a bad way to gauge it, and I know we can agree it's a bad way to engage it, but like nothing's on the news. There's nothing in the Star Tribune that some black leader stepped forward and said, you know, this is wrong, this has to stop. Now, on the reverse side of that, Mr. Edwards, if this politically correct what it's called achievement gap, which is actually a racial divide in education, was with some white students for 1 week, it would have been gone the next week. Okay, it would have been disappeared. Okay, and it's so funny that these white parents, you know, who you know have the opportunity. You know, education is supposed to be a civil right, and if their kids aren't getting the money to propagate their education, then they step forward, they step up and talk. But it seems like when we do it, when I mean we, I mean African Americans, Black Americans, born and raised in the United States, when we do it, we're bashing people, we're attacking people. We're
we're
heckling Jekyll, you know, and I don't understand those double standards. And we do have a caller, Mr. Edwards. Stand by.
All right, get the caller on. Go ahead, caller.
What's caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
How you gentlemen doing, Brother Pinback and Brother Pullback? Is we talking about them black Nazis down there at the Civil Rights Department?
Yeah. Get well, ready, you know, to open another concentration camp. Oops.
Well, I don't know nothing about this one here, but I can tell you about that Jane Khalifa.
Boy, Jane Khalifa.
Now, listen, I had a civil rights case pending, Don. You knew what it was about, and Mr. Edwards knew what it was about. It was about the Senator Minister and his nefarious bullshit. Now, he's going to tell me in the midst of the investigation, now, there's no director of no civil rights department is supposed to call you and personally tell you if I had my choice, you wouldn't like my decision. That's what she told me. I said, wow, what kind of minorities they got up there? Then you got them people running around up there. You got the receptionist up there that she's supposed to be doing Xerox copy and paperwork. They do a lot of nefarious swiping and swapping paperwork. They got this thing where they try and tie you down and run you back and forth and all this old crap. You got them sisters up there going along to get along. You got a lot of go along to get alongs up there, too.
Yeah. Though the staff is quite a bit smaller than when you were there, about 8-9 years ago. they've really reduced the department. Of course, that's what former Mayor R.T. Ryback said he was interested in doing, is making this Minneapolis Civil Rights Department disappear. The DFL was not, and I know Mr. Allen, my associate from the right, loves this. The DFL wasn't quite comfortable with that because they felt that that would give some leverage to the conservative Republicans to talk in terms that the Democrats really aren't the friends of the African-American population. And so, your point is well made.
The overseers. Yeah, they're the plantation overseers. But, Mr. Allen, you know that there was a brother up there, the one that just got pushed out of there. What was it? Michael Brandon. Brother Brandon told me in my case he never
Ronald Brandon.
Yeah, Mr. Ronald Brandon. Mr. Ronald Brandon told me there was 80 violations in my case alone. But you know what the final word came back? No probable cause,
yeah. Your case was one of those cases that were shredded.
Oh, let me tell you something. They can do all the fucking shredding they want. And pardon my French, Mr. Edwards, but I sent mine out of state to much higher folks that said, this ain't nothing but a plantation here.
This ain't nothing but
a plantation. They up there paper shuffling and got them people up there walking around like robots. You got the Now, if that one that y'all talking about now, if she came from the Human Rights Department up under Tim Pawlenty, well, you ain't got to be no rocket scientist to figure it out. She ain't going to do a damn thing anyway.
Yeah. We've been saying that for the last 4 years.
She ain't going to do nothing but be a foot soldier. See, here's what they do. They groom these house Negroes in these little white cliques and these little organizations, and then when the opening comes up, let's put you in here. Just like we had that other brother, Brother Jordan, talking about we can make the paperwork look like we ain't never hired a minority, but we can make it look good on paper like we hired a minority. Well, what in the hell are you doing there, brother? What are you there for?
He was a gatekeeper.
The gatekeeper to institutional racism. And then Mr. Sinister Minister, you know, Mr. Edwards, that's the very same thing he went to running down there talking about at the Capitol, talking about, this is institutional racism. fool, didn't you know that we don't honor you either? We covered up your mess only for you to come back and ask for some money, and then when you can get the money, you cop an attitude. They just like these 501c3 pimps. These people bitch, whine, and cry, and bitch, and when that white man's shit don't fall into their hands, they get highly upset. They get mad at you all. They get mad at us. They get mad at everybody just so they can ride around in the most sponge rubber suits and the most fake-ass cars thinking that they're going to get them a free gate in heaven.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Jay. Okay, my brother. Yep. Appreciate it. Appreciate your thoughts and your observations.
I'm just trying to figure out what kind of life is they going to live in retirement, because April Fool's Day is coming up, and a whole lot of them look like they might be going to the federal penitentiary.
I hope they got
their Zuzus and Wham Wham money together, because guess what? them brothers in the joint, they keeping up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, Jay. Appreciate it, man.
You can't come in that federal penitentiary talking that old good old Minnesota proper English talk. Them brothers up there is ready to throw down, or you're going to either wash them drawers out, or you're going to take some of that 501c3.
All right, we'll leave it there. All right,
okay.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right.
we have that was good. We have another call.
Good. Let's get him in.
You are live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, gentlemen. It's Michelle calling from Communities United Against Police Brutality, and I know both you fellas. How are you doing this evening?
Ms. Gross, your name came up so many times today. I'm so glad you called. But go ahead.
I'm glad I called, too, because I saw that you're putting out on Facebook for people to call the city council starting, you know, right away. And people do need to call the city council because Velma Corbel is a train wreck, and she needs to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so,
I agree. Okay.
You know, yeah.
And your organization has had some experience not only with her, but the previous directors. The last caller was reflecting on a director that was last there 8 years ago, but the pattern in practice seems to be the same. Michelle, do you feel that they can get the necessary six votes? Because apparently Councilman Quincy will not be on site, and so a 6-6 tie would mean that the nomination dies, if you will.
Right,
do you think that they can get the? What
you know,
do you think?
I think it's a good possibility. We know for sure that Blong Yang is a no vote. It looks likely that Andrew Johnson is a no vote, and that
mm-hmm.
you know I'm positive about that. I think Lisa Bender could be brought along. I think Alondra Cano can be brought along, and then that means, you know, somebody's got to talk some sense into Cam Gordon. I don't have any idea why he voted yes last week, which was ridiculous, you know, but I think we're close. I think we could get no votes. You know, I think they just need to hear from more people. It's important because what happened at the last hearing, at the committee hearing, was all of the, you know, your last caller made some interesting points, because what happened at the committee hearing was all of the suits showed up. You know what I mean? The established so-called anti-racist groups, right? The 401, you know, what do you call these? 501c3 nonprofit.
401c3, yeah, nonprofit.
Yeah.
Superintendent school showed up.
The poverty camps, you know, all those that usual.
Craig Taylor from the University of Minnesota was another one there, Mr. Allen. Yeah, go right ahead.
Oh,
my goodness.
You know, the crowd. The crowd showed up. She's a wonderful person. She's very efficient. She's very, you know. Well, you know, when you're talking about civil rights, efficiency is not the correct measure. This is here's some efficiency for you. 439 complaints about the police, period, and not one of them had discipline. That's efficiency, but that's not service, okay? That is not actually helping the community. And the secret process that she used to destroy the Civilian Review Authority, that alone ought to be enough reason to get rid of her ass. I mean, alone that should be enough. But it's nowhere near it's nowhere near the problems, because she's got, you know, half a dozen people suing her office, you know, and former
employees. Oh, that's correct.
Suing
her office.
Yeah,
in fact, she's had to settle some lawsuits,
Yeah.
Ron Brandon,
Marvin
Taylor, and some of her folks.
You know, so the work environment itself must be hideous there. You know, so the way they measure success down there is ludicrous. And on top of it all, one of the things that those people don't realize is when she destroyed the Civilian Review Authority, and look, it never had the resources to do the job right. We all agree with that. It needed power and resources. That's not a, you know, there's no question about that. But at least with the Civilian Review Authority, when they finished, you know, when they had complaints, you could actually get information about the complaints. Under this new body, there's two problems. One is because they don't discipline anything, and everything goes to, if there's ever any findings, they go to coaching and counseling. Coaching and counseling for things that are literally crimes on the books. This is what people get coaching and counseling for. So then that means that discipline is non-public. And the second thing about it that's messed up is that, you know, so they're covering all this up. They're whitewashing this. But the second thing, and this is the worst part of it probably of all, is when you complain to this new agency, this new agency, because you're really complaining to the police, actually puts you in danger of being prosecuted for the so-called false reporting of police brutality. Under state law, people can be prosecuted, and they are starting to use that more and more and more. We're starting to work on more of those complaints where people are getting prosecuted for so-called falsely reporting police brutality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why
that was a strong piece of legislation that the Police Federation made sure came into play 2 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Right, and more than that, they actually made sure that that they put people at risk with this new structure. So if you go down there and you make a complaint, you are putting yourself at risk. We are literally telling people don't go to this agency because, first of all, it's futile. You're not going to get anything out of it. But secondly, you're putting yourself at risk for prosecution. That's how dangerous this thing is.
Yeah.
Completely.
Absolutely.
Insane.
All right, Michelle, appreciate it. Appreciate your observation. Hopefully people will turn out, and once again, though you cannot speak to the council, as you and I know, you cannot speak to the council on legislative day, but maybe enough folks will be talking tomorrow behind closed doors and, you know, seeking out their council members and et cetera and talking in terms of at least putting this on hold. But now here's the problem they've got. If you are able to get those six votes, and that means a 6-6 tie, the recommendation of the mayor dies. And, boy, that's going to be kind of interesting on how that'll be brought back. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, she's a good talker, that mayor, but, boy, she's sure not showing it with the people that she's putting, you know, putting forward for reappointment. I couldn't believe Susan Siegel got through. Not one. I mean, nobody wanted to vote against her except Cam Borton. And now he's flipped the script on it, and he's coming forward to vote for this Velma Corbel, who is just, you know, a hot mess. I mean, why are they even – you know, backing this woman up, it's insane, you know.
Her role is the destruction of the Civil Rights Department. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly
okay,
right.
Okay, all right, Michelle, appreciate it. All right,
take care.
All right. Bye. Stalin, get that phone number out again. Maybe we've got some other people that are not afraid from our community to talk in terms of the mindset and what they feel. But like I said, our leaders are structured organizations. I don't want to say anything, Mr. Allen, but did the NAACP take a position on Ms. Corvell's reappointment?
No, they did not. There was no official NAACP comment on anything that's currently going on. No public comment, I should say, going on in Minneapolis. And that's that's an unfortunate thing. But, you know, Mr. Edwards, our caller before the last caller brung up an important point. On Sunday, March 9th, approximately, it was two Sundays ago. We didn't get an exact date, but I looked at the calendar. Two Sundays ago would have been March 9th. Minnesota Senator Al Franken called together a bunch of those people that Michelle Gross was talking about, the usual suspects, the suits, you know, the organized institutional 501c3s, you know, Louis King, Jerry McAfee, Sondra Samuels from Northside Achievement Zone, just of the variety of who's who in nonprofit to kind of feel them out. And I call it they want to make sure that the Negroes are on the plantation kind of meeting. Mm-hmm. And it was very unfortunate for Al Franken to make this move because it was headlines on Independent Business News Network this morning. He meets with a few black community members and rejects arrests. And the problem with that is that, you know, it took a white elected official to get these black people in one room. And he didn't do this last year. He didn't do it the year before. and he did it in the election year to kind of get the gauge on, you know, I'm make sure that, you know, you guys are get what you need, you know, and like the guy said, you know, they're following him around, yes, massa, and when you poop, hopefully it falls in my hand. And mm-hmm. that creates a lot of problems for the black community when we have really no functioning black organizations to speak for our causes. You know, God forbid if...
Well, now I have to take exception from the left, Mr. Allen, because my sources and operatives tell me that our leaders are in very in-depth and deep conversations, not for public disclosure, but that they express the opinion that they're expected to express as it pertains to relationships with the African-American community. There are meetings going on all the time, you know, and as you pointed out at the top of this program, I mean, there was a meeting with the Civil Liberties Union, you know, to get the right kind of perspectives on what should be done if a decision is made to do anything about, you know, police misconduct and et cetera, though there has been ample opportunity over the last decade, two decades to do that. So I kind of have to disagree that you know, our leaders are in discussions. Now, that doesn't mean that they have these discussions per se with the masses of the community that they, you know, speak on behalf of, but they are engaged in conversations. Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah.
And and we've really seen that with regards to the in fact, I have to correct you also. I mean, the last time we had the kind of gathering that you just addressed was right after the 2011 tornado. That
You're
kind
right.
of gathering took place in the front room of the Urban League, and the mission and the structure was put together by our leaders, and they marched off to take care of the needs of the masses of people who had been affected by the tornado of, 22nd of May, 2011, and mm-hmm. Things went well for a select group of leaders. I'm not sure that all of our people got attended to, but hey, you know, like we've been told, that's not our side of the highway.
No, not at all. We're not supposed to worry about that.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Get that phone number out there again in case we got folks say that, you know, they happened to come in late and we didn't give the number. That
okay.
phone number.
Yeah, phone number is 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904, and the phone lines are wide open. We have a full chat room. And so,
oh, I bet we do.
Yeah, and so, I mean, if you guys are sitting there listening, you know, on your computers, you just call in, you know, and just express, you know, how you feel and what's going on.
Now, let me ask this question, Mr. Allen. Is the district going to be able to find the money to recapture their commitment to Southwest Minneapolis and those very upset taxpayers out there, predominantly, you know, white part of the city. Do you think they have the money or what? Because I didn't see Superintendent Johnson's apologies indicate that they don't have it, but then it did not indicate that they do have it. Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
so is that money available for those schools out in that Southwest area?
You know, that's hard to say. But, you know, something that I was looking at, Mr. Edwards, a couple days ago, if we just bounce back real quick here to 2008, you know, when they were had people flossing to pass the referendum, Strong Schools, Strong City, citing that it would be an extra $60 million a year for 8 years, which was to begin the 2009-2010 school year, and the funds were going to be dedicated to education essentials such as literacy, math, science, textbook technology, class size management, and it was supposed to make change for black, Native American students, Asian, Somalis, and homeless teens. But, you know, as of this budget meeting, we don't really know where that extra $60 million is going, besides, you know, to pay salaries, of course, but it has not been any effective change within the system. So, I mean, without full disclosure, they might not have any money. They might have put it out in different areas that excluded these children in the classroom. We just don't
know. Yeah. Isn't that something? By the way, I've been asked to indicate that the meeting that took place with County Commissioner Linda Higgins went very well. Went very well this evening. Apparently, a small group of leadership of the NAACP met with her and apparently had a very productive meeting. And so maybe we'll be hearing something from that. I know that the state conference of the NAACP, which represents the five branches of the NAACP, Duluth, St. Cloud, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Rochester, will be meeting Saturday morning at the New Salem Baptist Church of the Reverend Jerry McAfee. That meeting actually is open to the public. So for those that have been talking in terms of kind of getting a feel for what the NAACP is going to be doing, we'll have an opportunity to come and listen to reports. There normally are workshops and et cetera, updates on what the NAACP has been involved in, strategies, anticipated activities such as, well, the stadium here in Minneapolis, the construction going on in Rochester, Minnesota, and et cetera. So my understanding is that by bylaw and constitution, those meetings are open to the public.
Yeah, and I think that people should hop down there, get on top of it, and get involved, because the more involved, you know, that people, you know, get in this process, you know, we have some accountability, at least. Some kind of accountability.
Yeah, certainly.
And that's what's needed now.
Anything else? We're going just to 9:30 tonight, okay?
Yes, sir.
Anything else we need to try to make sure it gets out for discussion or at least an acknowledgement of?
Yeah, well, there's I'm just trying to pull up the information in the studio here, but I know, just I can talk off the top of my head till I get to that point. CAP, Community Action Partnership, I think is the name that Mr. Clarence Hightower runs.
I think it used to be the Washington Ramsey County CAP Agency.
Yeah, the CAP Ramsey.
Yeah, WRCP. Yes, Clarence Hightower. Yes, he is the executive director.
Yes, there's a Somali agency ran by Layden Youssef, executive director, called Crossing Barriers. I received an email today, latest harassment letter from Clarence Hightower, written yesterday. This email, notification of harassment by Community Action Partnership of Ramsey Counties, led by Clarence Hightower, was a title. And just real quickly here, Mr. Everett, let me just kind of go through some of the important parts here. This is CAP of Ramsey County, Washington, with a budget of $30 million from taxpayers' monies under the leadership of Clarence Hightower. His team, his board of elected officials, and lawyers have agreed to sue this small agency, Crossing Barriers, in a low-income agency that serves immigrants and students of color in the community organizing, addressing structural racism, and achievement gap, ran by Layden Youssef, a Somali-born professional, founder and executive director. The public hearing, this is what she wants people to know, the public hearing is going to be April 10th at 9:30 a.m. at April 10th at 9:30 a.m. at 15 West Kellogg Boulevard in the Housing Civil Court. This, Ms. Youssef, Mr. Edwards, has been filing complaints and that she's being harassed by Mr. Hightower and the people that work for him. She's noticed a decline in African Americans working at CAP, especially African American women who were there at once. I know right now there is a open, I couldn't get the details, but there's an open case between Mary Anderson and CAP, and they would not give me the details at the Minneapolis Human Rights Department because it said it was an open case. And this lady, she alleges that Clarence Hightower.
No, you said Minneapolis. You meant Minnesota Human Rights Department.
Yes,
Minneapolis
yes,
has no
Minnesota.
Jurisdiction in St. Paul.
Minnesota Health Department. Minnesota. I mean, Department of Human Rights. I'm sorry. Minnesota Department of Human Rights.
Minnesota Department. Okay. Oh, is that right? No. Right.
Yeah. And so I actually have the letters, the complaints to the board about Mr. Hyde. She sent I just opened it up before the show. I mean, she's detailed it. Documented everything meticulously. And so
it's pretty interesting to see. Hey, we have another caller here. Mr.
Oh,
let's get that
caller in.
Mr. Doug Mann, you're live on the air.
Oh, hey, yeah. I just turned on your radio show maybe about 15 minutes ago, so I missed a lot. Have you did you make any note of the article that Steve Brandt did on the differences
in teacher
experience?
Yes, we talked about it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. You're talking about shortfall in the budget? Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, one thing I've been saying about this, these disparities in teacher, you know, of exposure of students to teacher, inexperienced teachers, is that, you know, the state, until apparently fairly recently, wasn't keeping track of the data that they're supposed to under Minnesota Administrative Rules, Chapter 3535. They're supposed to have compare any school district that operates racially identifiable schools. That's where, say, students of color are more than 90% of the enrollment. They're supposed to have measurable educational inputs, things like teacher experience, and compare that with the schools that are not racially identified. And I'm just wondering what happened to the annual reports that the Commissioner of Education is supposed to request and the school districts are supposed to provide.
You know, I think that you talked about that very briefly with us last year at the time that we were reviewing your lawsuit as it pertains to the Viking Stadium and et cetera. And I think you made mention of that one evening on the program, and, you know, we made inquiry, and in fact I was told by folks affiliated with the board and folks who allegedly have contacts inside the board that allegedly all that was going to be done. I've seen nothing in the form of an official report that indicates that happened, you know, so apparently it didn't. It should be a point of contention. I know that on a program on an urban station here about 8 weeks ago, the Commissioner of Education was kind of asked that question, as well as the week before, a couple weeks before, the president of the Teachers Federation was asked that question, and it was interesting, their respective comments. Both of them indicated concerns about the absence of the implementation of the statutory requirements that you just mentioned. But on the other hand, I haven't seen either of those parties, the Teachers Federation or the commissioner herself, take any public position on where the report is and if there is compliance, if there's been compliance. It appears at this point that there's not been compliance. But let me ask you then that question, because there's a reason for my madness, quote unquote, if you will. And that is, I know there are a number of candidates for are there two or three vacant seats on the school board this year?
There's two citywide, and then there are three seats
by district.
For districts.
Okay. So. My question is there anything being planned? Because in my column for publication next week in the Spokesman Recorder, I call upon the Urban League, NAACP, Mr. Allen, and the African-American Leadership Alliance to host over a period of 4 months public forums so that the public may have an opportunity to hear the candidates talk in terms of some of these issues, such as what Mr. Mann has raised here just in the last number of minutes. Are there any forums that are going to be held even by the League of Women Voters, Mr. Mann, to your knowledge?
Well, I'm one of the citywide candidates. I'm not running for DFL endorsement, but I'm seeking green endorsement. There's one.
The League of Women Voters maintain they're nonpartisan, so it doesn't make any difference if it's citywide or by district. But normally, somebody puts on a forum so the candidates can be presented to the voters before the voters vote.
there's the Neighbors Organizing for Change or something like that is planning to put on a forum. Let's see if I've got the date in front of me. It's Saturday the 14th or something like that.
14th, okay. I'm also checking.
That's going to be at the Capri.
Capri Theater on West Broadway in North Minneapolis. Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, not the Capri. It's the Shiloh Temple is where they're going to do it.
Shiloh Temple, which is also on West Broadway and Fremont. Okay. So Shiloh Temple is hosting a forum in early April or almost mid-April. Okay. Well, see, now we find out. Now, this will be for the citywide candidates or for the candidates of the so-called North districts?
I haven't been able to figure that out. Citywide for sure. It's the other seats are, the district seats are on the east side of town.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be, it'd be odd, and there's only one of them that's being contested. There are two people who are running opposed in the, I think the North and the University area seat.
Now, is that the seat that's held by Mr. Knorr, who is also running for the legislative seat, challenging longtime incumbent in that particular race, Phyllis Kahn? Is that the seat you're talking about?
Yeah.
How is he able to defend both seats under Minnesota law?
There's another guy. His last name is I think Saeed. He's running unopposed for that seat. And by the name, it sounds like he's a Somali candidate, possibly.
Okay, so Knorr is not running to defend the seat that he was voted onto the board a couple months ago, succeeding a individual who is deceased. Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Right. That wasn't kind of an odd thing. wasn't a long-term commitment, apparently. But
no doubt about that. Yeah. Okay. All right. Anything else as we're down to kind of the last minutes?
Yes.
I am real interested in doing a writ of mandamus against the Commissioner of Education to get her into compliance with the equal opportunity in education rule, the 35-35 that I mentioned. So what we would ask you to do,
keep us informed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Particularly stay informed with Mr. Allen, and we certainly will make available some airtime for you to talk in terms of how that writ of mandamus is going.
Yes.
All right, Mr. Mann, appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
All right.
Well, Mr. Allen, we're down to the last couple minutes. Anything?
No, I have nothing, but we'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel, and we'll see if we move any further in the black community.
All right. Huh? All right, let my man James Brown take us home.
Yeah, he'll do that here. I got to find him.
All right, take care.